What you will hear soon enough will be clips from old-time radio shows. You'll be able to get a glimpse of what they did in those days. We'll be back with John Tefteller in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Tefteller with us. John, your passion for all this, how did it start?
Well, I guess I was a different kind of a youngster. When I grew up in Southern California, and I don't live there anymore, I live in Oregon now. But when I grew up in Southern California back in the 60s and 70s, I was really into older things. I liked older music. I liked older films. I liked older television shows. I liked everything from the past, so to speak. I always thought that it somehow was better than what I was being force-fed on radio or television or films during that time. So I always liked the older things, and I just started collecting them at a very young age. Even before I had a driver's license, I was hunting flea markets that I could walk to or garage sales to try to find old recordings. I found some recordings of Groucho Marx and the Marx Brothers back then that were actually quite rare. I didn't realize how rare they were until I made a call to Groucho Marx's agent and talked to him and told him what I had. And within 24 hours, I had an invitation to come to Beverly Hills to have lunch with Groucho in 1975. And they were so impressed with the things I brought them and the things that I talked about that I was finding and hunting down that they hired me on the spot as kind of an assistant archivist. And I wound up doing that. And that really started the ball rolling from there.
I love it. Where did you go to lunch? Do you remember?
At his house.
Aha. What kind of place did he have?
He had a very nice house on Hillcrest Road in Beverly Hills.
He was a legend.
An absolute legend. Now, he was quite old at this point. He was 85 years old, and he was not in the best of health, but his mind was still pretty darn sharp. And sitting at lunch with him was pretty much the same as playing You Bet Your Life, the old quiz show that he did. He would ask silly questions or make silly remarks or jokes or insults based on whatever I would say. He was a little slow. But the mind was still there, and it was a hilarious, fun experience to have.
And, you know, we've got a Groucho Marx clip for you, and this was, I think, with Fanny Brice, right?
Yes, this is not actually from, if you're going to play this right now, this is not exactly from the show You Bet Your Life. This is from a show called The Big Show, which was an attempt in the early 50s to stop the viewers from switching over to television. And it was hosted by Tallulah Bankhead, who was a legendary actress on Broadway and films. And she would bring on the really biggest names they could find and have them do very well-written skits or performances. And on this particular show, they brought Fanny Brice, who is a famous, famous vaudeville comedian that Barbara Streisand portrayed in a movie later on. But her character on radio was Baby Snooks. And they had her as Baby Snooks come on the Groucho Marx show to play You Bet Your Life, the quiz show. And that's the clip that we have.
All right, let's listen in.
You Bet Your Life, starring radio's funniest quizmaster. And here he is, the one and only, there used to be four, Groucho Marx.
Come on, Snooks, let's get out of here.
No, we won't, Daddy. I'm mad at him and I want to win his money. Of course, I hate him.
You hate me? Please don't say that. It's a set rule on radio that all quizmasters must be known as lovable. I'll tell you what, if I like you, would you like me?
Well, all right.
Fine. Now we like each other, right?
Right. But you know something?
What?
I liked you better when I hated you.
Well, I don't really care if people hate me as long as they think I'm lovable. Now, where were we?
Well, we want to bet you some more money. My daddy still got $40 left.
Snooks, no.
But I saw you take it out of Mommy's pocket.
Your mommy sounds like she's got a great pocket. Wouldn't mind reaching in there myself sometime.
Please, Mr. Marx, you should have a little respect for my wife.
I do. I have very little respect for her. Particularly since I've gotten a load of you two. Now, let's proceed.
All right. I want to ask you a question, and we'll bet $40.
Snooks! Oh, you're going to ask me a question?
Yes, I am, and I'll bet you $40.
Little does she know that I have her in my power, for I am the master of the quiz, And soon I shall have all her money.
Are you ready for the question, mister?
Okay.
All right. First pronounce the word T-O.
T-O? Two.
Right.
This is like taking money from a baby.
Now pronounce T-W.
Two.
Now pronounce the second day of the week.
Second day of the week. Just a moment. Now, this is the one with the catch in it. She wants me to say Tuesday, but the correct way to say it is Tuesday. But I'm sure she always says Tuesday. So if I say Tuesday, she'd say I'm wrong, because it's Tuesday. So I'll say Tuesday.
Wrong,
I mean,
we win.
Tuesday.
Wrong, we win.
Wait a minute, I say Tuesday.
Wrong again. The second day of the week is Monday. Take the money, Daddy. We win.
That was brilliant.
Yeah, that's 1950, but the comedy still holds up today.
You know what? I wonder if that little quiz would work on anybody. That's worth trying. You know, but
well, that's what's so good about it.
Quality is fantastic. You cleaned it up, obviously.
Well, these come from original 16-inch electrical transcriptions, and we do spend some time taking some clicks and pops out of them and making them sound good, yes. But overall, if you get them and they're not too battered, they tend to sound really good.
You know, what's great about those days, John, they utilized comedy in a wholesome way. It was clean. I mean, it was not gutter trash stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, that wasn't allowed.
No, it wasn't allowed, but I mean, they wouldn't even think about it.
No, it all stems from the vaudeville and then the film and the codes that protected the film.
Sponsors would have walked.
Yeah. It was all done so that anybody could tune in the radio, no matter what age you were, and find some entertainment. Now, when we get to some of the more scary shows as we move along with the clips, those were done more late at night, and they were pretty much warning people that they could be a little bit gruesome or a little bit scary, and so there was that issue. But as far as good, clean humor, yes, radio was filled with good, clean humor, and I think that's fabulous.
Tell us about the show Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Well, Inner Sanctum Mysteries was known also as The Creaking Door, and the big opening of the show, which is, I think, what you're going to play, has the sound of a door creaking, and then they welcome you in to hear these weird tales of horror. And Inner Sanctum actually began in the early 40s, and a lot of the big-name horror stars, from Peter Lorre to Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff, they would appear in plays, radio plays, on this show, Inner Sanctum, the first few years of it especially. And they're some of the absolute best in scary radio from back then. The one that I gave you to play is one called The Wailing Wall with Boris Karloff, and it's actually a reworking of the Edgar Allan Poe story, The Telltale Heart.
I love that.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host to welcome you through the squeaking door into the land of ghosts, vampires, and other gay, hilarious people. Friends, are you looking for an apartment? Well, we have just the place for you. It's sturdily built, completely of marble, with cold running water every time it rains. You don't have to worry about the landlord putting you out. The lease is forever. All you have to do to get this little love nest is call your undertaker and get yourself a little bit dead.
Gabriel, do you hear me?
What do you want?
What are you doing down there?
I'm fixing something.
Well, why don't you come up? I don't want to be alone here. I can't bear to be alone. Come up, Gabriel. What's the matter with you? Why don't you answer me? Oh, you're just doing it for spite. I know you are. Stop that hammering, Gabriel. You know I can't bear that noise. Now stop it, please. Gabriel, will you stop that noise?
Oh. You came down.
Well, of course I came down. Did you expect me to lie there while all this racket was going on? Well, you know I'm a sick woman, Gabriel. What are you doing there anyhow?
You can see.
Well, yes, I can see, but it doesn't make any sense to me. Oh, you've made a huge gaping hole in the wall.
Now, what on earth did you want to do a thing like that for?
You'll find out soon enough.
And what are all those things?
Stonemason's tools, cement, plaster.
Well, I never dreamed you knew how to use them. Oh, I'm going back to bed.
No, Agnes.
No?
No.
Gabriel, that rope in your hands.
Yes. I thought carefully about this rope, Agnes. It's the most merciful way. It leaves a little trace, since there's no blood.
Gabriel!
You won't make it difficult, will you, Agnes?
Murder!
It's the only way.
No, Gabriel!
We couldn't go on like this. Your imaginary illnesses, your constant nagging. I have to be free of them, Agnes.
But murder?
This is best for both of us.
No, Gabriel. Send me away. Do anything you want. You can get a divorce. A divorce there, see? That would solve everything. You could have your freedom.
Stand there, Agnes. Just as you are.
I know. That other woman, Dorothy Carter, that actress. That's why you're doing this. Oh, you thought I didn't know about that, Gabriel. Well, I do. Yes, I do. No. No, let go of me again. That rope. Help me.
It will be done in a minute.
Done? Oh, you'll never be free of me. As long as you live.
That's scary, John.
Yeah, they were quite well done. And, of course, that's Boris Karloff, who played Frankenstein in the films and was a big horror star in all different kinds of things all the way up into the 60s. And the show goes on from there. After he walls her up, then he goes to bed and he starts hearing wailing coming out from behind the wall.
It haunted him.
Yes, just like the Telltale Heart.
The quality of their audio, how were they mic'd? I mean, they didn't have little lavalier microphones at the time.
No, they used what are called RCA 44s for the most part. Those big kind of rectangular microphones, ribbon microphones, and they sound terrific.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Truly amazing. And what did they record onto?
Oh, when they made the recordings that we're hearing?
Yeah.
They recorded them onto acetate or glass or some form of metal, usually. And it would be a metal record coated with an acetate coating or a glass record, a literal thin sheet of glass with an acetate coating. And they would cut that live as the show was being broadcast.
I remember my parents had a small metal record once. What would that have been made out of?
Well, it would have probably material. Been aluminum. And the small ones, like you're referring to, would have been the ones that were made for home use. Just like people could buy tape recorders in the 50s and 60s and 70s, back in the 30s and 40s, you would buy, if you had the money, you would buy a home recorder, and it would be a little machine that would cut a small acetate disc, and you could record yourself playing piano or send a birthday wish to your uncle or whatever. You had about 2 or 3 minutes aside to do that. Well, the ones that they used in the studios were just elaborate versions of those, much higher quality, and they would feed the program into that and cut it live as it was being broadcast.
Gosh, have we come a long way technologically, haven't we?
Well, we have, but look at how good these things sound.
Yeah, oh no, there's no question about that. Next clip I want to play before the break is called Escape, Lenigan versus the Ants. What's that?
Well, that's a famous short story. Escape was a really interesting late 40s, early 50s radio drama. They didn't use a lot of big-name actors on the show, although the person you're going to hear on this one is William Conrad, who went on to play Cannon on television.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And he was also Matt Dillon, Gunsmoke, on the radio, not on television, but he was Matt Dillon on radio. And Lenigan versus the Ants is about a plantation owner who's trying to save his plantation from an army of invading ants.
Let's listen in.
Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and carefully contrived to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to the Amazon jungle and to a creeping, crawling terror, as Carl Stevenson told it in his gripping story, Linogen versus the Ants.
I first met Linogen while performing my duty as district commissioner. As my boat neared his plantation landing, I saw him upon the riverbank, regarding me with mild interest. A great hulk of a man with bristling gray hair, bulky nose, and pale eyes. His entire appearance somehow suggested an aging and shabby eagle. He escorted me to the terrace and had a drink brought. I came quickly to the point of my visit and issued my warning. Linogen puffed placidly at a huge cigar and listened as I told him, unless they alter their course, and there's no reason why they should, they'll reach your plantation in 2 days at the latest.
Uh-huh. Well, it was decent of you paddling all this way just to give me the tip.
Tip?
Commissioner, even a herd of crocodiles couldn't drive me from this plantation of mine.
But these aren't creatures you can fight. They're an elemental force, a gigantic catastrophe. 10 miles long, 2 miles wide, ants, nothing but ants, and each one as big as your thumb, and each of them a fiend from hell. Unless you clear out at once, there'll be nothing left of you but a skeleton picked as clean as your own plantation will be.
I'm not getting out.
But you can't fight.
Yes, I can. I've got the best weapon there is, Commissioner. Intelligence.
But can't I make you understand the hideous...
I think it is you who do not understand. In the 3 years I've been here, I've met and defeated more than one catastrophe. Flood, drought, a plague. Events which caused many of my neighbors to flee for their lives. No, Commissioner, all my life I have lived with one creed. The human brain needs only to become fully aware of its powers to conquer even the elements.
Linogen, your obstinacy is endangering not only your own life, but the lives of your workers and their families. You don't know these ants. I tell you, you don't know these ants.
John, where did the music come from? A live orchestra there?
A live orchestra, absolutely.
Wow.
And they would take their cues from a director, and they knew when to come in. When the director signaled, they would come in. And imagine that story. An army of ants 10 miles long and 2 miles wide headed towards you.
So, Conrad, you know, they didn't pick him to be Matt Dillon for the TV show. They picked someone who probably looked better with James Arness.
Correct.
And so they were beginning to realize that television was image, too.
Oh, yeah, television was all about image. But these radio actors were really, really good with their voices.
Oh, they were. There's no question about that. But it's just interesting how they made that change, that metamorphosis, where they began to think, all right, some of these stars, though, we need someone who looks a little younger and things like that. And they did that. They made that change.
William Conrad was young, but he was more portly, and they needed a nice, svelte, tall guy.
That's right.
Matt Dillon. So they had to come up with a James Arness rather than William Conrad at that point.
The Jack Bennies, those people, you know, were much older. And like we talked about earlier, they probably wouldn't make it today in terms of, you know, hitting that audience. What made them so successful then? How come you couldn't get that 23-year-old to do that show when they made that TV switch?
Well, they used people like Jack Benny because they had a built-in audience for those. Jack Benny was extraordinarily popular.
He carried it with him.
Right. And so actually Jack Benny did radio and television simultaneously for a while. He did his radio show and then he did his television show, and they were two different programs.
John, we're going to listen to more clips when we come back, including a scary one starring Orson Welles. And we're talking about old time radio next hour with John Tefteller. We'll take your phone calls. Maybe you can throw in a few little stories. We will be back in a moment, though. More of these incredible shows on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. John Tefteller with us as we listen to some of these remarkable old-time radio shows. How long would these programs last, John? on the air? An hour, half hour?
Oh, they varied. Most were half an hour. Some shows were an hour. And some of the children's shows and soap operas were 15 minutes.
And were some of the shows, most of the shows, daily, weekly? What were they?
Well, the kids' shows and the soap operas were on 5 days a week. The things like Inner Sanctum and Escape and all these dramatic shows were playing, those were once a week.
Did radio build its clientele? I mean, those who sponsored these programs, did they develop into powerhouse companies of today?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Now, some of them, and we haven't heard any of the original commercials yet. I'm not sure if you included any of those on any of the clips that were
no,
used.
No, we don't have those.
Okay, well, they do exist, and they're on the originals.
Unless they wanted to buy time on the program.
Well, yes, but something like Roma Wines, which was
exactly.
Spence, is long out of business.
That's right, but millions of people would be running around the country tomorrow trying to find out where that was.
But, yes, the sponsors integrated themselves into the programs in a way that really they became identified with the program. For example, and I don't want to sell too much toilet soap here, but Lux, which had Lux Radio Theater, they called it Lux Radio Theater, and it was all the biggest stars in Hollywood. And then in the commercial breaks, they would have Cary Grant or Betty Davis or whoever talk about using Lux toilet soap.
Yeah. So, that's right.
Yeah, they integrated the sponsors right in there in a big way on most of the programs.
Were the cigarette companies advertising in a big way then?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Jack Benny was sponsored by Lucky Strike, and I don't want to give any particular cigarette company a plug per se, but I'm just giving a historical fact. And the cigarette company sponsored, the wine company sponsored, anything you can imagine was a sponsor of a radio show.
And they stayed with it. Now, did they do specific commercials within the show with other clients or just that one product?
Oh, no. If it was Lux Radio Theater, the only thing you heard during that hour was commercials for Lux.
Wow, that was their show.
It was their, they owned it, lock, stock, and barrel.
Interesting. Suspense Theater, tell me about this.
Well, Suspense,
The Hitchhiker.
Suspense was a show that ran for a long, long time. It started in 1942, and it was actually one of the very last shows to go off the air in 1962. And they had big-name stars, and they had regular radio stars, depending on what night it was. And they would do plays designed to keep you in suspense, so to speak. I assume that means we're leading into one of them. Which one are we leading into?
The Hitchhiker.
The Hitchhiker. Okay. The Hitchhiker is a famous story by Lucille Fletcher, who is a famous writer. And The Hitchhiker has been redone multiple times on radio and in film. It's all about a guy driving across country, and in this case, it's Orson Welles. And he's driving across country, and he keeps running into, not literally running into, but seeing on the side of the road this kind of figure that keeps beckoning to him, and it gets weirder from there.
Rod Serling did one similar to that. He probably got the idea from The Hitchhiker.
Absolutely, yes.
Let's listen.
Suspense. Columbia's parade of outstanding thrillers, produced and directed by William Spear and scored by Bernard Herrmann. The notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
I'll try to get the car back on the road again. I feel like a fool.
Yet the thought of picking him up, of having him sit beside me, was somehow unbearable. At the same time, I felt more than ever unspeakably alone.
Hour after hour went by. Fields, the towns ticked off one by one. The light changed. I knew now that I was going to see him again. And though I dreaded the sight, I caught myself searching the side of the road, waiting for him to appear.
Yeah, What do you want?
Sell sandwiches and pop here, don't you?
Yeah, we do in the daytime. If we're closed up now for the
night. I know, but I was wondering if you could possibly have a cup of coffee, black coffee. Just
no, not this time of night, mister. My wife's a cook. She's in bed.
Well, no, don't shut the door, please. Listen, just a minute ago. Just a minute ago, there was a man standing here right beside the stand, a suspicious-looking man. I don't mean to disturb it. And you see, I was driving along when I just happened to look, and there he was.
How's he doing?
Well, nothing.
You've been taking a nip, that's what you've been doing. Now, on your way before I call out Sheriff Oaks.
I got into the car again and drove on slowly. I was getting to hate the car. If I could have found a place to stop, to rest a little. I was in the Ozark Mountains of Missouri now. A few resort places there were closed, only an occasional log cabin, seemingly deserted. That's all that broke the monotony of the wild, wooded landscape. And I had seen him at that roadside stand. I knew I'd see him again. Maybe at the next turn of the road. I knew that when I saw him next, I would run him down.
Cool. Another great one.
Yeah, notice the music on that show was by Bernard Herrmann, very, very famous composer.
He did Hitchcock movies, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. He was one of the great composers of suspense-type music for films. And he was the music director on Suspense and did individualized music for each play for weeks at a time.
So what time would this program, Suspense, run? Would it be like on a Sunday night?
It was on different times over its long run. I could quickly.
But it was late, as you said.
Oh yeah, no, it was when it was first on. This particular one that we were hearing, this would have been on a Wednesday night, and then it went to Tuesday, and then Saturday, and then back to Tuesday, and then Thursday, and then Friday. It was all over the place.
Right, and again, for years, there was no competition. There was no television. That came later and then started whittling away at programs like this. But so they had the lion's share of the market. Did they have rating services then?
Oh, yeah, they had ratings. And I can tell you that these programs, especially the ones we're listening to, because I picked some of the top programs of the period, they had huge audiences, way more than any television show would have today.
Wow.
Television is so fragmented today, even the networks don't have the kind of audiences they used to. But a show like this, a show like Suspense, having Orson Welles on doing a show, you would have probably 60 to 80% of the nation listening.
Huge market share. Huge.
Oh, yeah. Insane market share.
Next one is Suspense, also Sorry, Wrong Number. Tell us about this.
Well, Sorry, Wrong Number was actually made into a film later in 1948 starring Barbara Stanwyck. But the original radio play was done by Agnes Moorehead.
And I will remember her from a Twilight Zone episode when she was sweeping away miniature astronauts.
Well, she did that. She was also on Bewitched.
She was the mother.
That's correct. But in this case, she plays an invalid woman who's at home alone at night. She picks up the phone to make a call, and she overhears. This is in the days when phone lines could cross rather easily. She overhears a murder being plotted, and she tries to get more details. She hangs up in a panic. She calls the police. She tries to get the police to listen to her. Nobody believes her. And pretty soon as this show unfolds, you get the idea that she actually might be the target of the murder.
I remember in the late 50s, John, we had party lines where if your neighbor was talking, you picked up your phone, you had to wait.
Yes.
It was amazing. We, you know, people shared phone lines.
Yes.
So let's listen to this one.
And now with Lucille Fletcher's Study in Terror called Sorry, Wrong Number, and with the performance of Agnes Moorehead, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
Your call, please.
The police department. Get me the police department, please.
Thank you. Ringing the police department.
Oh, can't you ring them direct? This time.
Police station, precinct 43, Sergeant Martin speaking.
Police department, this is Mrs. Stevenson, Mrs. Albert Smythe Stevenson of 53 North Sutton Place. I'm calling up to report a murder. I mean, the murder hasn't been committed yet, but I just overheard plans for it over the telephone, over a wrong number that the operator gave me. I've been trying to trace down the call myself, but everybody is so stupid, and I guess in the end you're the only people who could do anything.
Yes, ma'am.
It was a perfectly definite murder. I heard their plans distinctly. Two men were talking, and they were going to murder some woman at 11:15 tonight. She lived in a house near a bridge. Are you listening to me?
Yes,
and, ma'am. And there was a private patrolman on the street. He was going to go around for a beer on 2nd Avenue. And there was some third man, a client, who was paying to have this poor woman murdered. They were going to take her rings and bracelets and use a knife. Well, it's unnerved me dreadfully, and I'm not well.
Yes, I see. When was all this, ma'am?
About 8 minutes ago. Oh, then you can do something. You do understand.
What's your name, ma'am?
Mrs. Stevenson. Mrs. Albert Stevenson.
And your address?
5353 North Sutton Place. That's near a bridge, the Queensborough Bridge, you know. And we have a private patrolman on our street. And the 2nd Avenue is...
What was that number you were calling?
Murray Hill 40098. But that wasn't the number I overheard. I mean Murray Hill 40098 is my husband's office. He's working late tonight, and I was trying to reach him to ask him to come home.
Yeah.
I'm an invalid, you know, and it's the maid's night off, and I hate to be alone, even though he says safe as long as I have the telephone right beside my bed.
Well, we'll look into it, Miss Stevenson, and see if we can check it with the telephone company.
But the telephone company said they couldn't check the call if the parties had stopped talking. I've already taken care of that.
Oh, you have?
Yes, and personally, I feel you ought to do something far more immediate and drastic than just check the call. What good does checking the call do if they stop talking? By the time you track it down, they'll already have committed the murder.
That was strong. She was great.
Oh, Agnes Moorehead was one of the absolute best actresses on radio. And this is one of the best plays ever done on radio, and it's a riveting story. And, of course, it winds up that she's the victim and she gets murdered. And the very last line is the murderer picks up the phone and the cop is on the other end of the phone and he just says, sorry, you got the wrong number, and then that's the end. It's a really great dramatic program.
That is unbelievable how that would be done. And, I mean, did they make mistakes at all?
Very rarely. And if they did, for the most part, you couldn't tell. Once in a great while, you could catch them tripping over a word or something.
Yeah.
Usually, no. Usually, these were pros. These were the absolute best.
Oh, my gosh. She was riveting.
Yeah. It's a riveting performance. One of the best ever in radio.
So we've got Mercury Theater now that went way, way back. 1938?
Well, yeah. We were talking about Orson Welles and the War of the Worlds in the first hour. This particular program was done a few weeks before the War of the Worlds broadcast. In fact, this is one of the very early appearances of Orson Welles on radio, and he's doing Count Dracula.
Here we go.
We're starting off tonight with the best story of its kind ever written. You will find it in every representative library of classic English narratives. It's Bram Stoker's Dracula. The next time I speak to you, I'm Dr. Arthur Seward. George Galouris plays Jonathan Harker, and Martin Gable plays Dr. Van Helsing. It's Dr. Seward who tells the story, and so for the moment, goodbye, ladies and gentlemen. I'll see you in Transylvania.
The Mercury Theater on the Air presents Orson Welles as Count Dracula in his own version of Bram Stoker's great novel, Dracula.
This castle is on the very edge of a terrible precipice. A stone falling from the window would fall 1,000 feet without touching anything. I explored. There are doors, doors, doors everywhere, and all of them locked. The door to the great hall, the door to the courtyard, every door in the castle is closed, bolted against me. The castle of Dracula is a prison, and I am a prisoner. The next night, I couldn't sleep. So after a few hours, I got up, and lighting my candle, I placed my shaving mirror on the dressing table and was just beginning to shave.
You seem rushed, Mr. Harker.
I had not seen him, although the reflection of the glass covered the whole room behind me. I turned to the glass again. Count Dracula was close to me, and I could see him over my shoulder, but there was no reflection of him in the mirror. It was blank. I started and cut myself on the side of the throat. The blood was trickling down my neck.
Count, my mirror! The blood! The blood! Wipe the blood from your face, Mr. Harker. And take care how you cut yourself. It's more dangerous than you think in this country.
I think, John, in some cases, the music is scarier than the performances.
Well, yeah, they tailored the music to make you jump. Yes, definitely.
Of all these programs that were out there, and then when they started dying off, did any of them make the transition to television? Not the people, but the programs.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Suspense actually transitioned into television. Jack Benny transitioned into television.
Like One Step Beyond and stuff like that was...
Well, One Step Beyond is later.
Okay.
That's from, I think, the early 60s. So, no, not that one. But there was a... I believe there was an Inner Sanctum program for a while on television as well. Yeah, some of them did. Not all, but some.
When the shows all left radio in the early 60s, what did those old radio stations pick up? What did they start doing? Talk radio really didn't come into its heyday.
No, it was primarily music. Top 40 rock and roll or the Pat Boone Show or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, they did a lot of music and news. Radio became music and news, and then talk radio started coming in the late 60s.
Pat Boone's an old friend of ours, and I bet he loved it in those days.
Oh, he made a lot of money off of that music era. Yes, he did.
Yeah, he sure did. He sure did. And he did well in the movies, too. Of course, they don't pay what they do today.
No.
So when you were doing all this and collecting all these, was there any challenge there for you? Was there something that was very difficult for you to get?
Well, the challenge is to find the actual electrical transcriptions, because most of them were thrown away or destroyed or recycled or whatever. So they're very unique when you see them. As I say, they're 16 inches in diameter, most of them. There are some 12-inch ones. But they're definitely oversized, big old records, and they contain these classic recordings. And they're not easy to find because most of the general public didn't have access to them. People in the radio business had access to them. The actors, the directors, the script writers, all those kind of people would. But the general public couldn't just buy these radio shows. And when the radio shows were done live, when they were done, the recordings were kept for a while for various reasons and then eventually either given away or scrapped. And so I have to go out there and try to find what's left, what still exists. And if any of your listeners have any of these original 16-inch or 12-inch radio recordings, they need to get a hold of me through my website, and we'll get them transferred to modern-day digital so they can be heard again.
All right, John, we're going to take a full hour of phone calls with you, plus we've got two more clips left I want to play, and we'll go through that with you, too, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.